Hi, this is Mark Skinner of Windswept Cider, located in beautiful Meaford, Ontario, up in South Georgian Bay, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 143. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Windcaller and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, we are speaking with Mark Skinner of Windswept Cider, and that is based in the southern area of the Georgian Bay. Now, if you don't know where that is located out there in Ciderville, well, you and I are going to be discovering it together and talking about Perry and apples and where they are being sourced from. Before we go there, though, we're going to go to a special tribute that I have set up for this week on Cider Chat. So make sure that your glasses are full because we're heading out to Normandy, France. Last September, I was touring about in Normandy, France, preparing for this September's Totally Cider Tour that will be headed back to that region. One of the people on my list that I had been working with to try to set up a time to do a recording with was Jérôme Dupont of Domaine Dupont. The DuPont family have been making cider and Calvados for a very long time, and you can listen to that full conversation. It is episode number 98. Regretfully, Ciderville, I must announce that Jérôme DuPont died unexpectedly this August 13th, 2018, and there was a memorial service on the 21st. I now feel that I could talk about this in respect to the family I have been holding back. With that said, there's not much that one can make sense of a senseless act losing someone so young. It is painful. And in terms of for Ciderville, someone who was really a beacon of innovation and so well-spoken to be able to really move the cider knowledge, not only for his region, but for worldwide. He was really beloved. So it's it's heartbreaking. So what I've done is pulled out a segment from that episode number 98 for you today to get a glimpse into his story and to take a pause in time. So I recommend to have that glass at any time you can, whether right now or later on, to tip your glass to the legacy of Jérôme DuPont. His voice will not be forgotten.
My name is Jérôme DuPont. I'm the fourth generation running the estate. The family history on this estate started in 1887. My great-grandfather, when he settled here, he was renting the place, and thanks to the stock he built between 1887 and 1910, when the place was for sale, he managed to buy the place by selling his stock of Calvados, and then he owned the place, and then my grandfather took over. Classic farmer as well, cows, horses, cereals. And it's in 1980 when my father came back from his first experience as an international banker. And he used to see a lot of French wine and spirits abroad, but not so many Calvados nor cider. So he came back with his ambition was to turn the family farm into a sort of a wine and spirit estate, apple estate. And I joined in 2002. My background is engineering. I worked for 10 years as an engineer. And then I said that I probably picked too many apples when I was a kid or waxed too many bottles of Calvados, but I needed to come back and join the family business in 2002 and worked along my father and my sister since then. My level of interest for cider, I measured with the level of interest from the US. There's a long history between cider and American people for the pioneers, and cider got forgotten in some ways, and apple ciders got forgotten. But I really saw the revival of cider in the US, I would say around, really, it started 6-7 years ago, mm-hmm. and it's been growing mm-hmm. ever since. Mm-hmm. And now you see that spreading into Northern European countries, craft cider, of course. Mm-hmm. And it's always this issue between what we call real cider and the other ciders. And now it's not that the cider producers who have to change their habits. It's the bar owners, restaurant owners who have to understand that it's worthwhile having a cider list.
Absolutely.
Sommeliers have to understand that it's worthwhile having different cider styles.
Yes.
And focusing on food pairing with cider.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's coming. It needs some time. People need a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
The interest for cider has been growing over the last, the last 4 or 5 years, and
mm-hmm.
and it's coming. The complexity of the ciders are, of course, due to the apple varieties, mm-hmm. but also to the wild yeast mm-hmm. And the aromas that they develop. Having said that, I think that cider producers around the world also have to relax. In Normandy we're producing cider for many generations, but with our apples and the type of apples we have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think that part of the excitement of the cider world
mm-hmm.
Is that there is a diversity of ciders. Mm-hmm. And I think it'd be really sad to see all the cider producers using the same apples mm-hmm. and using the same process
Absolutely.
To produce the same cider. So relax, use the local apples you have, the technique you have. A bit of knowledge doesn't hurt, of course.
Right.
That's what's going to make cider successful.
Mm-hmm.
That was Jerome DuPont, recorded in September of 2017 at Domaine DuPont. Jerome died unexpectedly on August 13th, 2018, at the age of 48 years old. The quotes I really liked from that little piece there that really resonates and I think speaks a lot of truth to all of us is where he talks about part of the excitement of the cider world is the diversity of the ciders. And he really called that out and really is calling out to, I think, makers everywhere that he just said, relax and enjoy the ride. You have to have patience with something like cider. And counting on folks like all of us out there in Ciderville to be beating those drums and keeping that going. It's not going to be like going to a fast food restaurant and, you know, starting your franchise and it's going to like be kicking out and people are going to know what a hamburger is or a hot dog or a taco. It doesn't work that way. And that to me, the beauty of discovery, we are like Indiana Jones in it here, going out and down the tunnels and exploring and connecting the dots. That is a gift that, when you look at it, a lot of industries don't have, because it's a gift that's rooted in a heritage of apples from so long ago. Dang, I could get poetic on this. I'm going to rein it back for now, but that's something to think about and to take his words to really heart. They weren't new to this ball game, and they have been watching it for a long time, and there's some really good insight. So stop your crying if you're having a hard time out there. I know it's tough. It's tough for me, you know, too, as a podcaster. It's tough for everybody. But we got to keep on keeping on and lifting each other up. It takes tenacity and your passion. Keep on moving forward with that. Speaking of passion, cider tours are my passion. So I'm going to make this happy announcement right now. Coming up in November, the day before Cider Days kicks off, so we're talking about November 1st, I am leading a cider tour to New Hampshire and Vermont. It's going to be leaving from Greenfield, Massachusetts, and returning from to Greenfield, Massachusetts, my county area where I live, in my spot of Ciderville. The tickets have not gone on sale. I'm just waiting for one more piece, but I'm going to give you this little happy news right now. The first cidery of the day that we're going to go to is Farnham Hill. That's the Poverty Orchards in Farnham Hill in Lebanon, New Hampshire. And we're going to be in a little bus with people and drinking cider along the way. We'll be doing growler fills at Farnham Hill, talking with Steve Wood. I'm sure Nicole's going to be there, Wanda, maybe Louisa. Oh my goodness, it's going to be all these awesome people and just traveling about for a day. It's kind of like the pre-game before Cider Days, and I am stoked to be able to offer this. So stay tuned. Two things are happening. The Cider Days tickets are going on sale September 1st. Now, if you don't know what Cider Days is, well, I always like to say it's the oldest cider fest in the U.S. and the largest, if not one of the largest in the world. This year, it's in its 24th year. Do note that most of the workshops at Cider Days are totally free, so you don't have to worry about having a ticket. But there's some particular workshops that you might want to go to that take place on Sunday. So you could go to ciderdays.org to check that out. I think the schedule is up now. And one thing that you want to prepare for is that there is a cider salon that takes place on Saturday night. There's two sessions. Those tickets always sell out early. So don't hesitate. Really get on the ball. If you think that you're going to be coming to my spot of Ciderville, which is Massachusetts, it's kind of like Cider Center for the U.S. where it was really, it started. I mean, the first commercial cidery to go live was here in this county. It's going to be a humdinger time. And the day before it all kicks off, we're going to have a full day of going and touring about in Ciderville in New Hampshire and Vermont. Yeah, I'm so excited by it. I want to tell you everything, but I'm going to hold off because I'm waiting for a couple fine tuning of it. So stay tuned. Good things are coming our way. When we come back, we're going to be going to that chat with Mark Skinner of Windswept Ciders. Sometimes the big world feels so small when it comes to cider. For instance, last week on episode 142 with Kat Fleming of Iron Bark Ciderworks out in Claremont, California, I was mentioning how easy it was to get to the cidery because if you're flying into Southern California to the town, or really it's a city called Ontario, and then you're going to head to the west to L.A., you could stop at Iron Bark Ciderworks right there in Claremont, right off the highway, Highway 10, I believe. And, you know, that name Ontario, it's been coming up a bit on Cider Chat because I had recorded back in June on my cider tour with Ryan Monkman of Fieldbird Cider, based in Prince Edward County, Ontario, all these conversations with makers that he was introducing to me on that tour. Essentially, Ryan sponsored Cider Chat to come on up and meet the makers. So this Ontario theme, I think that's kind of cool because it kind of pops out of nowhere that there's so many similarities. Different towns are named the same thing. I wonder if Ontario, California, was founded by Canadians from the province of Canada. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. I really don't know, but that's kind of an interesting query. Getting back to this main chat, I recorded this in June on a hot day at Heartwood. Mark came down, brought his ciders, and we sat down. And you could kind of tell we've been drinking, you know, a little bit into the day there. And it was just kind of like really cool, casual conversation for me because I was just able to kind of relax and enjoy his ciders, kind of like what Jerome was saying earlier. So we're going to head to that chat next and find out a little bit what he is doing there, making these amazing ciders, and how he is able to disperse it out to you, perhaps. So let's grab a glass now and join this chat with Mark Skinner of Windswept Orchard Cider, based in the southern region of the Georgian Bay of Ontario, Canada.
Like when you listen to a radio host for so long, you never see a picture. I didn't see your picture until you posted the thing at Niagara Falls, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's just...
With my baseball cap on.
Right. You're like, oh, wow, that's...
Yeah. Well, I hope I'm not disappointing you because
not
when people
all,
hear,
no.
It's like, oh, well, who is this person? And
well, the imagination can run wild sometimes.
That's true. I know. Maybe I should kind of keep it under. I can only imagine what you think what the Talking Palms look like. But imagine seeing that you have Perry here, that you know what a Perry pear looks like.
Yep, somewhat.
Yeah. And apple or medlars up here.
I don't think so, but there's something on a tree that looks very similar, but I don't think it is. I'm not sure.
They have a little bit of a inferiority complex because
I bet, yes.
You know that they yep. Look kind of like a
right
a butthole.
Aha!
That's what people say.
Right.
So
yes.
They make fun of them, right. And so that's why they kind right. Of speak as they do. But anyways, so I digress. So let's talk about Windswept.
Sure. Yeah, we're up in, we got a 100-acre farm just outside of Meaford, a few clicks from the bay.
Not just an orchard, but a farm.
Yeah, it's a 100-acre property. It's been in cattle for a few generations. Our neighbor Ron, who's about 72, is still running his cattle on the property. And the young cider people who have moved in are slicing bits of the land away from him and planting trees. So...
Mm.
But we did all our own grafting. We got a nursery with a few thousand trees in it. And as we find time, which we don't have any, we're planting them out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what are you doing when you're not doing your orchardy?
I work full-time at a vineyard growing grapes for a winery.
Okay, yep. All right.
So,
wow.
The orchards itself have kind of taken a bit of a backseat just because the cider has taken off a lot quicker than we thought it was going to.
Great.
Which is great.
Yeah.
But the trees are in the nursery for a bit, a year or two longer than mm-hmm. expected, which is fine.
So yeah. How did you get into, you know, you're working at a vineyard and now you're doing cider or
yeah.
Perry? I mean, what was the, I don't know, inspiration to bring you there?
Well, I went to chef school with my amazing wife, Courtney, right after high school. And we did the cooking thing. And then that kind of led us to Europe to do some traveling, volunteering on farms and pulling pints and working in pubs. And that's kind of where I fell in love with farming. And I came back and landed a job growing organic vegetables. I did that for about 10 years. And then I... just wanted to change and ended up at Spirit Tree Cidery in Caledon there with Tom and Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
Running the press, helping in the orchard, cleaning tanks, doing that kind of gig.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's kind of where it spurred it on. You know, we had done business plans to do vegetables and do the whole nine, and there was not a lot of funding out there for that kind of thing. Where cider, you know, it's a legit business. It's not just kind of agricultural. Mm-hmm. So that was attractive to people who were interested in giving us funding. And it allowed me to be an organic grower, because apples are hard to grow nice for the table fruit if you want it to be perfect. So making cider is a perfect match for that.
Right. You don't have to worry. Just so folks listening, what that means is they don't have to be that exquisite looking apple sitting in the grocery store.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they have a home.
They do. We glean some nice fruit depending on the season to sell fresh, but most of it goes to cider.
So the varieties that you have here of apples, what are some of the varieties? Can you name some of them that you're using?
None of the stuff that we planted out is fruiting yet. Mostly English, French cider apple varieties, some kind of North American heirloom ones, dual purpose, Tolman sweets, golden russets, things like that. We use local Georgian Bay apples. We use a variety from our Lost Orchards that we do. So to kind of bridge the gap until our orchards start producing, there are lots of old big tree orchards up in Georgian Bay that have been kind of left for dead since the high density things has taken over. So we have relationships with those landowners, and some we take care of the orchards, others we just show up and take the fruit and give them some cider. Spies, Max, some golden russets, Cortlands, unknowns, namely, they're coming from our Lost Orchards. I met a grower down the road from us who was going to tear out all of his Crimson Crisp trees because he was having a hard time getting them to color, getting them to size up like that they need them to. So I did some trials. It makes a fantastic cider, so he's now keeping them in, and we buy all those apples off him every year. And we have an old homestead grove on the farm, so back in the middle of the farm where the old homestead was back in the day, you know, the old lilacs planted around the homestead, and there is an old grove of pears and apple trees there. I don't know what the pears are.
Are they pretty tannic? Or
yes, most of the people call them kind of winter pears because they don't ripen up until the dead of winter, or spitters because...
Yeah, you don't want to eat them.
You don't eat them.
Bonus.
But yeah, they worked out well. So, and the hedgerows are covered, littered with them everywhere.
So you scored in that way.
We did, yeah. So
yeah,
we're trying to keep that under
like
wraps.
Yeah, that's kind of like the first I've been hearing.
Us shaking the trees on the hedgerows and knocking on doors.
You're
and
lucky.
Asking, yeah.
How big is the diameter of some of these pear trees?
Oh, they're huge. I would say 14 inches easy, some of them. Yeah, they're big. They're monsters. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And in terms of working with the Perry, how's that been going for you? You've been making it for a while, as long as you've been doing the cider?
Yep. So last year was our first year of production, 2016. Or that would have been 2 years ago now. And we just did a very small amount. Like, I think we did 2,300 liters altogether. Only a few hundred liters of the Perry. We're up to 10,000 liters now in our second season, about 500 liters of Perry. It's gone really well.
Good. Yeah. So how do you work with Perry? I'm kind of curious. How you take it from that kind of winemaker's approach?
I use the same approach for most things. I'm kind of learning how pears act different during fermentation than apples, and slightly adjusting what we do. We've only had 2 seasons with it, so I haven't...
Well, let me back you up a little
sure.
bit. This is one of the tough pieces with pears is that the ripening.
Yes.
So these are late season, you know, and so let's take it from there. Like, what are you looking at? You're going out each day, and can we start at that little spot?
Sure. So we had, you're right. We had great difficulty trying to harvest them when they were ripe without coming back and having them all be on the ground and covered in bees and not good for use anymore. Courtney, my wife, has been, because the pear was her thing. She was desperate to get that made to start, and I'm thankful she did.
Wow.
So the newest scheme is to essentially cover the entire floor of the pear trees with bins and then just let them fall. And then when we want to take the rest, we will just shake them and take them.
That's a lot of bins.
It is like a lot of bins.
Can you tell me what size bins we're talking about here?
So we're using, they're tulip crates, essentially, what bulbs come in. They're kind of small.
Plastic or wood?
Plastic, yeah. Okay. Something that you can...
With an open base?
They're all open with air.
So air, okay.
Yeah. So we're going to try that. That's our newest concept.
Oh,
yeah, we haven't done that yet. Up until the point, we were just tarps. Every few days, taking them, going back down.
Then they fall, and then you're like, you know, okay, you got all these little pears.
Yep.
And they often will start ripening from the inside out, right?
Yeah, so we don't have cold storage at our place or anything like that, so we do a lot of sweating just because that's the way it is.
Just outside, they haven't been pressed or anything, you just let them sweat.
They just sit in the bin, and essentially what happens is we don't have a press on site. There's a gentleman in Mildmay who is maybe an hour and a bit away who does all sorts of small lot pressing, and will take wild apples and pears.
You are working hard, man.
Yeah,
wow. Yeah. That's a lot of love in each of those bottles. Wow.
So what happens is we have to wait until we have a full truckload of product to send, and then we have to wait until the truck and the press guy can all come together. So it's not necessarily up to us as to when it gets sent away. So there's a lot of kind of coordinating there, but... yeah, we have a good time doing it.
And so pressing pears, too, could be a bugger.
It can be, but fortunately, I have experienced pressing pears at Spirit Tree. They were all dessert pears, table pears there. A lot of rice hulls and days of cleaning a lot of swearing. So these ones are great. Like I when I said I was sending pears, that he was both press guys we used were kind of I'm not sure, we'll give it a go, but because they're really hard still. Like even when they ripen up and they start to taste sweet and kind of smoky and spicy, they're still rock hard. So it's been working.
Wow, that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, are you doing a wild ferment with these guys?
No. So what we do is for both our apple and our pear.
Oh, some glasses are coming
up. Yeah, I don't have an opener on me.
I normally do, but it's in my backpack.
Right.
I try not to leave home without one. That, and I have this like little dual thing that both corks.
Right, yeah.
And has an opener on it.
Nice.
I love it.
That works.
It's like my favorite Christmas
your
present.
Every day.
Yeah, I know. It's fantastic. Here we go.
So we bottle condition all of our ciders in Perry. Everything's bottle conditioned. Partly because we really like the bubble, and partly because we don't have the equipment to do anything else.
So you never know what's going to happen when you're opening up that Perry, and here you go.
It's okay.
Yep.
Celebration.
Yeah, it is.
You should put it like above your mouth, though.
Yeah.
So this is a pro move right here.
I know.
Usually I just spend this time swearing.
Yes, it's bubbling over right now, which is not an easy thing. And let's see.
So that's the 2017. Does the rhubarb cutter want a sip of Perry?
Okay. Sure. I've got some bourbon dressing.
You're loyal.
Thanks.
Cheers.
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 Here.
Yeah.
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 Yes. Yes.
So you're not doing the wild ferment?
No. So we've just started to experiment with some wild ferment. We had such a small amount in our first year. We wanted to make sure that everything was usable. So we have got some.
So subtle. You have nice. And the beautiful thing about Perry that we want to really make listeners know.
Sure.
Is that you have this sweetness to this. There's no back sweetening to this at all.
No.
And so you have this like residual sweetness that's always there in Perry.
Yeah.
Very delicate. This is a cloudy Perry.
Mm-hmm.
Unfiltered. It's really hard. It's really hard to have it clarify.
Oh yeah.
Pears, no
doubt.
Yeah. I'm getting a little bit of that, the note of, I've been letting it sit in the cup of beer a little bit. You know, that little, this is a really other difficult thing with Perry, is that little bit of sulfur.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens all the time with Perry.
Yeah.
It's one of those kind of beasts that you got to like work around. Right?
I think we're finding that the pears and also all of the fruit we get from the old abandoned orchards, very low in nitrogen. They struggle to ferment, and you do run into some issues with that for sure.
Yeah. There's ways that I know to manage that during the fermentation, but God only knows if I would be able to do it. I'm sure you're the dude to do it for sure.
Yeah.
Just to be able to get from the pear tree to this glass is like a noble venture. I really want to give my, you know, like, hey, man, you did a good job.
Yeah, we're happy with that.
That's pretty incredible.
And this 2017, in my opinion, is very nice. Mm. It's not as nice as the 2016. The 2016, that year was like so dry and so hot. And then the 2017 growing season was very wet.
Mm.
So I think it's made a difference in the sugar levels and some of the other notes coming
through. You worked so hard on this. This is amazing. Yeah, I'm could taste that. Really great.
Nice.
I feel like this is actually my first Perry in Canada.
Right.
And so I want to like mark this day, May 30th, 2018, my first Perry in Canada. May there be many more Perrys.
That's right.
In Canada, and many other folks around the globe be able to have the fruits of all the hard labor that you're putting into this. This makes me just weep tears of joy, right? I mean, that's huge.
We're happy with it, absolutely. Yeah, we've had a good result,
wow.
And people have been really receptive at market as
clapping,
well.
Clapping, so. Clapping, clapping. I'm serious. I think about that.
Yeah, no.
I mean, I hadn't really heard about anybody making Perry up in Canada. Right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, it's starting to take. Yeah.
It's starting to take, but you know, it can only take if you have the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And you are in like a little golden spot.
Yeah, we lucked out. Yeah.
So, where is the Georgian Bay? Like, how?
So Georgian
where
Bay
does it start? Like, how close am I to the Georgian Bay?
It's part of Lake Huron.
Okay.
So, it's just a kind of. Yeah, the bay that comes
What
in.
Kind of like, how many kilometers big is it?
Oh, I'm a new guy up there. I'd never been called a southerner before until I moved up there, so I don't...
Where did you move from?
From this area.
From this area here,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I was farming around here.
But so you're about an hour from here.
About an hour and a half.
Okay.
An hour and a half, so
okay,
yeah.
Hour and a half,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a big bay. It's a big body of water. Yeah.
So
there you go.
It's Kat's helping us out here. What do you got there, Kat?
The area is 15,000 kilometers squared.
From Lake Huron.
The bay itself, yeah.
Bay. Okay. Bay. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah. I just love that name, Georgian Bay. Yeah. I hadn't even, I feel so geography depleted. I had no idea, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we live in a beautiful... I mean, even all of Ontario here is just surrounded by the Great Lakes, which is fantastic, right? So, yeah. I mean, all along the ridges are beautiful fruit-growing
really
areas, yeah. So,
and just some of the most coolest people around, too.
Sure,
man.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you want to come to a place where you could, like, let your nervous system decompress,
right.
Come up to this area.
For sure.
So, you're doing this... How big is your setup? Where you're
very small.
You don't have your own press.
No.
You. What are you fermenting in?
We have stainless open top, like variable capacity ones.
Okay.
This past year, we've fermented a few in our totes, just because we've kind of grown up out of the size. It's a small, like we. I turned like a little Quonset building into. Into our manufacturing facility / cellar / tasting room. It's small.
So
the interior of it is probably the size of this kitchen out to the door there. It's pretty small.
Okay, and for folks who don't know what a Quonset hut is, it's a round, a curved top, a curved building,
correct,
right?
Correct, yeah. Essentially, it's like a little steel greenhouse.
Steel greenhouse, with a door at the one end.
Yeah,
Garage doors on it at all?
Big garage door,
Oh, great, good.
Yeah.
Temperature controlled?
Insulation, air conditioner.
Mm-hmm.
It works well, actually. Nice cement floor.
It's key.
Yeah. But nothing other than that, really. Because
we
did feel like we were going to outgrow it really quickly, so we didn't want
to
make it too high tech.
So where is Windswept growing then? If you're going to be growing out of it, let's hear that exciting
news. I think we're just going to make that footprint bigger. It's kind of a modular style of building. You can just take the front off and make it bigger that way.
Oh.
So we're thinking it's a cheaper option probably, and it works for us. So
yeah
we'll do that. Most of our desire in terms of having people out to the farm and tasting and doing that kind of thing will like literally be in the orchard in the field. It's not a very hospitable area during the winter, so I don't think we'll be accepting customers during the winter. We'll make hay when the sun shines during the summer and then kind of hibernate a bit.
So folks can come to your location and...
Yeah, so right now we're kind of tastings by appointment.
Okay.
If people drive down the laneway and we're home, no problem. But
no problem to come and have a tasting. Can they purchase a bottle from you there?
Absolutely, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. So that would be the first place I would recommend to go to Windswept.
Mm-hmm.
Short of that, where else?
We do farmers markets.
Farmers markets in...
In the area, specifically Toronto itself.
Okay.
So we do...
It's probably a couple farmers markets in Toronto.
There are more than a couple.
Yeah.
We do 10.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
How do you do 10 farmers markets? I mean, there's only one Mark in front of me, so...
And there's an amazing Courtney as well.
Okay.
My wife who helps.
Yeah.
And that's essentially where it ends, other than friends and family who help occasionally, but for markets, it's
so bad. How many days of the week are you doing farmers market during the height of the season?
Every Saturday and usually about two a week per week. So it averages maybe 2.3 per week or so, but some weeks there's four, some weeks there's two.
What is one guaranteed farmer market that we could expect to find Mark or Courtney at in Toronto?
The Witchwood Barns.
Witchwood Barns. That's exactly where I want to go, the Witchwood Barns. I mean, come on, what is that about?
It's the old, they transformed the old streetcar repair hangers into like a really nice community kind of artist's collaborative. There's all sorts of spaces that people have their kind of studios there, and there's a big park for the kids to run around, and it's in a really nice neighborhood.
Wow, that's so cool.
And I feel bad only mentioning that market, but
we'll start there. And another thing, they could always probably contact
and on our website.
Your website would be the list of it.
Yeah,
excellent.
WinceWebsider.com. Okay. We sell to licensees. We're in a handful of bars and restaurants. We're just trying to figure out how kegging is going to work for us and what accounts.
So is it right now bottles? And if I was in Toronto and I went to...
Yeah, there's a few bars and restaurants in bottles. We have, we do one, our perennial, we keg and put into to bars and restaurants now as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can you give us a bar there?
There are two, Her Father's Cider Bar and Cider Bar Rancy are top accounts in Toronto there in the West End.
Her father's
Cider Bar.
And the other one was?
Cider Bar Rancy on Rancy.
Cider Bar Rancy, okay. Yep. People just call it Cider Bar, though, right? Cider House.
Cider House.
That's right. That's what I was getting confused with.
I knew that.
Yeah. Anyway, you know that they have cider.
Yeah.
Make sure we'll have a link for them, too. You got the Perry going. You have the apples.
Yep.
And... Is there any barrels going on at your...
So we haven't done any barrel aging yet. We've just aged the cider about 6 months after it finished fermenting. But what we do is we separate all the varieties. Mm-hmm. We ferment all the varieties separately on their own. So this past season we had about 3,000 liters of the Crimson Crisp, and we would have done 1,000 liters each with a different yeast on each.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decide, we don't have any preconceived notions as to what we're going to do with it. We just taste it afterwards and decide, do we have one that's nice enough for a single variety? Yes, no.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we blend three together and trial that just to kind of try to build some complexity with the different yeasts in the same apple. And then we blend afterwards. Like the Lost Orchard is a blend, but it would have all been single variety ferments with different yeasts and then blended afterwards.
I want to talk about that, but first I just want to see, it says 2017 vintage, and I really haven't talked to anybody about that, but that's something that you could put on your labels in Canada, can't you? You could use the word vintage, just like wine.
Yep.
You are so darn lucky.
You guys can't use that.
You cannot use that in the States. No, not at this stage. You cannot do that. You cannot use the word vintage.
On cider?
That's right.
And is that because
Isn't
the wine people don't want you
that's
to?
That's because a TTB... is trying to catch up with cider. Uh-huh. And TTB is the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Trade Bureau.
Right.
And so they don't get it yet.
Right.
People say that, you know, it's a 2017 harvest.
That's right.
Which is another way to do it. But why not say vintage because it's so so nice? Mm-hmm. Just to kind of read this label, it's a 2017 vintage. Is crafted with five unique varieties of wild peri pear foraged from the old grove at Windswept Farm and hedgerow trees around Frog's Hollow.
It's the name of the side road down the road.
I love that. With individual characteristics ranging from delicate floral to rich caramel and spice. And we know that's the essence of peri-pear, mm-hmm. is that spiciness mm-hmm. that you get there. It's easy to see why our obsession with these wild fruit continues. I am so happy to read this. Now, the ABV is 7.4%, mm-hmm. which is... that's you got it kicking there for the peri.
I think that's partly because of the sweating happens as well.
Yeah. Any spontaneous keeping going on with any of these? Like low nutrition, you know?
Well, there is low nutrition for sure. And the first year I did have to kickstart it again. But keeping wise there.
Yeah. Is that an interest at all in the cider community around here, the makers?
It is for me. I know people are interested in it, particularly because you can get that kind of sweetness out of it mm-hmm. afterwards. It's just baby steps for me to start, though.
Yeah, I know, and I don't mean to pressure I could see how hard you've worked for that area. I could feel it. It's a beautiful label too, just for folks to see. It's who did that?
So I'll give a shout out to Eric Lewandowski.
Kidding.
That's right. So
Eric from Boston.
Correct. So we used some of his previously done Apple images from his card, and then he's done a one off of the Lost Orchard and the Perry.
I see his touch on that. Yeah. We're talking about Eric, who is, you know, he's an artist. He's like a graphic designer.
Great stuff, we just love the kind of pencil imagery of it.
There's Perry pears, which don't look like typical pears. Mm-mm. They're kind of a little bit more blunt in a way. Mm-hmm. They're curvaceous, but not in the same way. On a branch with some nice green leaves off of it. Really, really lovely. It says Wild Heirloom Perry. 2017 harvest, but not vintage there. Because that would be the place that I would think you'd do it. You're kind of playing with two little terms of vintage and harvest.
Casting a broad net there.
Right. You see these like little idiosyncrasies mm-hmm. that I noticed because I've seen so many labels and I'm always so curious on how people are presenting themselves because I'm coming at as in terms of a consumer. Mm-hmm. And,
I love
your branding. Beautiful bottles.
Yeah, the bottles are very...
Classic Perry kind of...
They are very bottles. Nice, yeah. And we're, as we're growing now... We're realizing that they've got this funny little bulb here. They mm-hmm. they do not work on labeling machines. So we've decided now that we'll only do them for our single varietals, and everything else is now going to go into something that's a little bit more manageable.
Well, then I feel very honored to be able to have gotten in this stage and have met you.
Well, we're going to keep the 500s and the single variety.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Our larger amounts, we're realizing that if you don't want to do it too crazy, too early.
Is it really windy where you are?
Very.
Very.
Is it
up flat, or?
No, we're up. It's up flat, but up on the top of the escarpment. Mm. Maybe 5 or 7 clicks, kind of as the crow flies to the bay there. So, it's quite windy,
And how many people are in the town that you live in? How many folks live there?
So we're just outside of the village in Meaford. That's a great question. I'm going to compare it to Aaron because I know Aaron when I grew up here. I would say that the village maybe has 10,000 people in it, but the municipality itself is
a righteous amount of people.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it could be off.
When you go out your front door, do you see neighbors? Can you give me like a little imagery of where like the Quonset hut is and what?
Yeah, Quonset hut's right next to the house, and then we have a neighbor across the road who's just kind of a rural property, no farm, and then it's cattle country. There are cows everywhere and cash croppers and hay and mm-hmm. dust and
Wow, I love it.
Yeah.
So the Lost Orchards mm-hmm. from the 2016. That's a beautiful again from Eric.
Yep.
with the apple tree there,
mm-hmm.
all in full bloom.
Mm-hmm.
Lost Orchard, what are we talking about there?
Well, so I prefer to use all organic fruit. I'm an organic farmer. That was my background. Apples are really difficult to find organically, and if you do find them, they're very expensive. So, you know, I'm planting my own apple trees and harvesting wild apples and pears, and quickly realized that, you know, we're not going to be able to make a living doing this. We need it, you know, we need to have volume to get going there. Lots of older orchards in the area that have been, you know, the farmer severed off the old house with the old orchard next mm-hmm. to it because he doesn't have a succession plan or somebody to take over. So mm-hmm. there's lots of summer residents mm-hmm. who have an older orchard there that is just being left.
Mm-hmm.
So I knock on the door and smile and say hello.
I've heard this story everywhere around the world. I love it.
And people have been really great about it.
Of course,
so,
yeah.
You know, they're happy that I'll keep the orchard mowed and they can walk through it in the summer as opposed to, you know, not being able to walk through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as it grows and the relationships develop, some we have kind of full-on rental agreements now, and I've taken over kind of management of the orchard, and others are just happy to see me kind of show up and use the apples and kick them some cider afterwards. So,
can you talk about that just for folks out there in Ciderville who, like, do that same thing? You talked about a rental agreement. So is that like a paper-written type of thing?
Yeah.
And what's the landscape on that to have it for X amount of years? Or
we go year by year, essentially, because what happens is, you know, they up and decide to sell the house or move or not be there, and you know, the new owner is no longer interested in having me there. So we go year to year.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, it just we learned pretty quick to really specify what taking care of the orchard means.
Yeah.
Because if to some people it means a lot more than others.
Yeah.
So, you know, some essentially I just mow them. I don't spray them anymore for anything. Some we do some corrective pruning just so I can get through with a mower and not get slapped in the face all day.
Yeah.
But it's really minimal.
Wow.
And we have big, they're now biennial bearers, right? So we have huge harvests every year, and it's kind of funny because it's almost like the orchards kind of talk to each other because they're almost all off and on the same year.
I bet they do.
Yeah.
I bet they do. That's the magic of cider.
Yeah.
So how big are some of these apple trees that you work
They're on? None of them are old standard orchards. They're all kind of semi-dwarf orchards. Still big.
Yeah.
Most
but
of them
they're,
are
they're their, mature.
Yeah, they're about 20 to 25 years old.
Not bad.
I mean, when they're on, they are there's a load of fruit in there.
Now, are you able to use ground drops, or do they have to be picked? Is there management governmentally around that?
I believe so. I think it more has to do with grazing and having animals in the orchard previous to harvest. But I don't think there's necessarily a law or any. I think it's just kind of frowned upon necessarily
to pick it up from
to ground use grounders. And I think more so in the larger quantity cider makers. Those. Because we're in the orchards, you know, once harvest season starts, we're in the orchards every 2 or 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
We will pick the grounders when we're going in the orchards because they're we know they've only been on the ground for a few days. Other times when we're just so busy and we can't get to the orchard as fast, they're rotten pretty quick, so it's easy to not use them. 90% of everything we use is tree picked. The pears is the one thing where we're up there every day, right? And so
those darn pears. They make you work, those little persnickety buggers.
They do, yeah.
And you know, they just like to be the so righteous in their own way. They have a certain character to them, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. So my sense, if I kind of recap all that, is you are working your butt off making this incredible cider by going out to other people's orchards, but you have planted your own orchard.
Correct. Yeah.
That you hope in how when
it'll be about they're all kind of semi-dwarf, semi-standard. So I'm looking at probably 5 years. I get any kind of anything to amount to anything.
Yeah, yeah. But it sounds like you're gathering enough. And did I ask you already the quantity that you're making per year?
We are, this past season, we pressed 12,000 liters.
12,000 liters.
Yeah, and that's up from 2,500.
That is year. That is pretty solid amount.
Yeah, we didn't expect to, to grow that much. But
so it was a good season last year.
It was a good season. And the Crimson Crisp grower, you know, offered us 12, 14 bins. And instead of, he kept the apples for us. So instead of saying, oh, well, we'll only take 8 and now you're stuck dealing with, thought we better take them all just so that he can make nice.
Yeah. Wow, Mark, you are, you know, I'm, the tenacity of you going in there and doing that, it's, not that I don't hear that a lot, but when you have to, you know, this is a common story going out there, and I think that it's really important for cider enthusiasts or people who just enjoy drinking cider to understand that from tree to glass is a quite an amazing journey, and there's has to be a whole lot of love going into it. I mean, you have to like really enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
this to be able to do it. Otherwise, how could you maintain that?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and I think it stems back from, you know, Courtney and I went to chef school because we kind of fell in love with food and the culture of food and sharing and just being around a table and cooking and so, you know, we've been growing organic vegetables for a long, long time. And, you know, getting to put something into somebody's glass is just, you know, equally as nice to produce. Mm-hmm. So
what do you normally have with the perry that you make, food-wise? What do you recommend?
We eat a lot of cheese.
Cheese. Yeah. Any, is there a local cheese that you typically get?
No, there isn't, actually. There's a few of the markets we go to in Toronto, there's some nice sheep cheddar.
In the farmer's market. Yeah.
That we get. And we like the sheep cheese with the perry. It's nice. But yeah, I'm not picky with cheese.
Not picky, right? All cheese goes.
Yeah.
And how about the Crimson Crisp?
Crimson Crisp is really nice. I can open it if you like.
Well, I won't dispute that.
Fantastic apple. It's a newer, modern apple. I believe it came out of Purdue. I could be wrong. But it's got a real white wine quality to it. And I hate to do that to a cider and say that, but it does. It cleared really well, too.
Single
varietal, yeah.
Wow. Tart, tannins.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, it turned out, I was very happy to have those land in my lap.
What kind of press is being used here?
An old rack and cloth. It's a big one, yeah.
So, you know, there is a cider house yeast style coming out of here.
Sorry? Yes, okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just be clear, you know what I mean, but maybe listeners don't like that. You typically get like a house yeast that's
right.
coming out.
Yeah.
I'm getting it from your Perry and your Crimson Crisp.
Oh, great. He is he's kind of the last of the local press guys in the area, the last farmer who takes anybody's apples and presses them.
I mean, it's really light, you know, but this is such a delicate cider.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You kind of said it was kind of like a wine cider. What do you mean by that?
Well, I got that response at farmers markets a lot.
Interesting. They don't expect that.
No, and, you know, people are rediscovering cider. What is cider? Is it sweet? Is it this? Is it that? So, you know, it's not like wine or beer where, you know, they may have never had that company's lager before, but they know what a lager is like. Mm. Whereas with cider, you know, it's kind of runs the gamut on all sorts. And it's also fairly subjective as to, like, what is dry and what isn't dry,
right?
And that's partly because of the, you know, the labeling issues in the LCBO. But yeah, the Crimson, when we have our bone dry ciders and some of our Lost Orchard's got a bit of funk to it, and I get the face like, ooh, I wasn't quite expecting that. I pour them the Crimson, and they get pretty happy.
They can, yeah, because this is another step up, and you know, I wouldn't say it's really wine-like. I mean, mm-hmm. really getting the fruit. The tannins in the apple are different than the tannins in the grape.
Yeah.
Would you agree, Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you're getting this kind of like mouthfeel that it's like it's soft. You know, it's a soft kind of tannin. Not that grapes don't have that too, but it's kind of like when you're biting into the skin of the apple mm-hmm. and you get that really nice tannin structure there. It's a little grainy.
Right.
You're really getting that out of this. This is first single varietal Crimson Crisp I've ever had.
There you go.
And so another banner day for me out in Ciderville. Holy smoke. So I'm going to pour myself just a little bit more
Absolutely,
of that if
yeah.
I could. Look at that. It has nice little... I mean, I just want to describe this here a bit. So that... I'm going to put it up against my white little notepad here. So we have that like light, kind of very light straw color, little carbonations. You said it's bottle conditioned, mm-hmm. right? Which
yep.
is amazing.
Yep.
What I dig about the cider is that it immediately kind of hits up on my the roof of my mouth and mm-hmm. on the outside of my tongue, and then it kind of coats the whole mouth, and it's a lingering,
nice
full mouth, you know, cider. Mm-hmm. It isn't just
right
straight front on the tongue.
Yeah.
It's a really full-bodied cider, and it has that. Do you have like a dryness, a sweetness, or anything on? You don't have.
I don't know.
So how would you describe this? Is it? Do you say it's a semi-dry, a dry?
I say it's dry.
Okay.
Yeah. I say it's dry.
Because mm-hmm.
for most people.
I would say it's a little semi-dry.
It is.
Isn't that interesting?
It is, but I find that most, like...
People would consider it dry. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
So for folks who have been drinking cider for a while,
mm-hmm.
we would look at a semi-dry.
I would, yeah.
Yeah.
But when I'm at market, I don't have a single cider that most people don't think is really dry.
Really dry, yeah. But, you know, this is... We're removing it, and you're really doing a good justice for the cause. Thank you so much.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And again, that beautiful label.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's fantastic. Yeah, and actually, people are really drawn to the classic red apple, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Simple and sweet.
Yeah.
Boom, right there. Great. I really want to congratulate what you're doing, and I appreciate you taking the time to drive this far.
Oh, pleasure.
And to
bring
this
pass it up. No,
amazing, amazing yeah. product that you're producing here. And I look forward to following your story, and certainly on the Perry and the single varietals.
Yeah. Nice.
You got it going on.
Excellent. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Mark Skinner of Windswept Orchard and Cider. They're doing some pretty neat stuff up there, right? Just a couple little terminology things I think it'd be fun to follow up on. When I was in Ontario, I kept on hearing the word escarpment, which is something that I don't hear often in the terrain that I'm from. And an escarpment defined is a long, steep slope at the edge of a plateau, separating two areas of land. Now, if you've ever driven through like Pennsylvania, you'll be down in a low valley, and then these like huge cliffs on sometimes on either side of the road just go right up to like a plateau. But if let's say you're like out in Colorado, like Mesa country, there you have that long stretch of plain and it rises up, and I would call it a mesa. But they call it up in Ontario an escarpment, which is kind of a cool word to just to kind of learn that and use it. So there's many escarpments around the world, but different areas call it different things. And how neat is it that they're bottle conditioning all these ciders? And I'll tell you, they're really delicious what he's doing. So we're going to keep an eye on Windswept Orchard and Cider. Wish that Skinner family a whole bunch of luck what they're doing. And those pear trees, I'm going to get up there and see those suckers because you know, 14-inch pear trees are pretty sizable. Not ancient, but pretty darn sizable. How lucky are they? So good luck to everyone, and thanks again to Heartwood Farm and Cidery, who let us sit around their kitchen table. If you haven't listened to the chat with both Brent, Val, and Kat, do go to episode 141. That kitchen table allowed me to do the chat right there and then sit down with Mark, and Ryan was in the background once again, drinking cider with a big old smile on his face, taking it all in. What a great guy. The Canadians, we are so lucky, all of us down in America, to have them be our neighbors. I'll tell you, super duper lucky. Cheers. I want to give a shout out to Ross Cider out in the UK. They are having a big festival starting this weekend, a camping festival. So if you want to find out more about that scene, you could definitely go to the show notes and get a link there, or Google Ross Cider events. They are wonderful people. Humdinger of a time. That's in like Herefordshire area of the West Country. And dang, I wish I was there. It's going to be so much fun. Oh, here in the U.S., we have Labor Day weekend, so it's a long weekend coming up. And I am going to one of my bestie's weddings. If you remember, I was talking about how I was on a trip, bringing her out on a little travel. Well, this weekend is the big picnic, and I kegged up some cider for that. Going to bring that on over. And I need to roll out now to go pick up some hops. Some friends, Lou and Sue Chadwick, who are always at Cider Days with that big giant table filled with all the different kinds of apples in the world. They cut them in half and let you chew on them and talk about them. Some folks coming to Cider Days say that's always their favorite thing to do, is to see all the different apples that Lou and Sue have. Well, they have some hops, and I'm going to go grab them now, some Cascade, and I'll be throwing them in some cider and playing with that. So lots of good stuff happening out there in Ciderville. We take it as it comes and goes. So keep it rolling forward on your end. Please do that, because you don't want to waste no time. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!